Okay, so DBQ session after school, September 19th. It is 2:56, and we have a DBQ on Thursday, right? Yeah, and everybody here looks panicked. We got about 20 people here, and everybody looks panic-stricken. So let's get started. What are some questions? Yes. How many documents are you going to get? My guess is there'll probably be somewhere around 8 to 10 documents as part of the DBQ. If you look at the French and Indian War, I think there's 8 or 9 of them on that one. So DBQs tend to average around 8 to 10 documents. Vicky? Never mind. Shiv? How should you prepare for a DBQ? Good question. Right now, you can't go back and study. It's going to be everything from chapter 1 through chapter 7. So if you know the material that you did and you've got a good feel for it, what I would just go back and do is if you took notes, just review the notes, because really what you want to do is review prior knowledge. You don't know what documents you're going to get, do you? No. So without knowing the documents you're going to get, you can't really prepare for the documents. However, if you have been doing the readings I've been giving you and asking you to do the primary sources, you should be in good shape, because remember, you're going to have to read through those documents and pull out information that supports the general direction you want to go in. Okay, so what I would do over the next couple of days, if I wanted to practice, is I would practice reading primary sources about some topics and just thinking about what's important in the source and think about how that might support your general knowledge. Did that make sense? Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, see, what I hear you asking is, how do you write a thesis statement without making a list? Okay, that's fair. You can make a list if you want, as long as your list does not give you back what's in the prompt. So, in other words, if you looked at that French and Indian War one, if you wanted to list three things without saying exactly what was in there, you can do that. That's fine. You have this totally confused look on your face. Who's got the French? I don't have it in front of me. Who's got the French and Indian War? What's it? What was the prompt? Okay, plus okay. So what you want to do is, if you wanted to write a thesis about that, you can write a thesis about three things you're going to say, because it wants to know political, social, and ideological, right, political, economic, and ideological, correct? So if you want to write a thing that says, you know, the French and Indian, relations between Great Britain and the United States were ever changed after the Seven Years' War as a result of fighting together and... As a result of differing viewpoints on how the colony should be run or governed, disagreement in how some of these services should be paid for, and also just over the amount of freedom and liberty people have in the colonies from the mother country. Did you understand that? So I hit political by saying governed. Right? I hit economic by saying how they're going to be paid for, and I hit the ideological in terms of the beliefs, the different belief structures between the colonials and the mother country. Does that make sense? Yeah? So if you want to do that, that's fine. Just don't relist it. Don't say, you know, the Seven Years' War forever altered the relationship between the colonials and the mother country in political, economic, and ideological areas. That you're rewriting the prompt. Do you understand the difference between the two? Yes, I see some nodding heads and some still confused looks. Okay. What are good things, or what are tips to make a good, strong thesis? Make it relevant to the prompt. Make it address the prompt. make it a little bit complex. It doesn't have to be massively complex, but you want it to be complex enough based upon the level you should be at. And be sure that it doesn't restate the prompt. Okay? You don't have to write a 12-sentence thesis. All the stuff you're writing in your introduction should lead into your thesis. Okay? I just gave you one. That was a thesis.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a thesis. The relationship between the Seven Years' War caused a radical change in the relationship between the mother country, between the colonists and the mother country, as a result of their differing views on how to govern the on their different views on paying for things and their different views on the freedoms of individuals. And then if you're going to do that, there's an assumption that you've got a paragraph each. Each one of your paragraphs is going to say something to the effect of, you're going to have one paragraph that talks about politics and governing, you're going to have one paragraph that talks about economics, one paragraph that talks about ideological. And from there, it's going to move to your rebuttal. Okay, that's just one idea for a thesis. There's lots of different ways you can write the thesis.
So in our actual essay, if you want us to do government economic and ideological.
Okay, so the question is, do I want you to do government, ideological, and economic in the actual essay? Yes, you have to do that because that's what the prompt's asking you. Yeah, you can. Or you can, again, there's different ways you can write it. You can write a paragraph on economics, a paragraph on politics, and a paragraph on ideology, and then write a rebuttal, and then a conclusion. That's a perfectly good way to do it. You could also blend them together into three separate paragraphs. You can write about politics and ideology, then you can write about ideology and economics, and then maybe you can write about ideology and politics, and then a rebuttal. And then a conclusion. Any way you choose to structure it. The simplest way to structure it is to write a paragraph about each one. Okay? That is the simplest way to do it. Because that's what the prompt is. In that particular DBQ, that's what the prompt is asking you to do. Remember, some DBQs are going to be asking you for two things, not for three things. Some are going to ask you for three things within two things. So you don't know what you're going to get until it shows up on your desk. Vicky?
How do we, like, actually incorporate the documents into the DBQ? Like, do we have to say, like, in document A, or do we
just
quote at the end?
Nope. Great question. How do you incorporate the documents into the DBQ essay response? Very simply, you say in, I believe one of the documents for there was something about Washington writing a letter asking for more military. So military experience, right? Okay, so you could say something to the effect of, Washington is... In Washington's letter asking for military experience, he alludes to the fact of blah, 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 blah. Open paren, doc C, if it's document C, doc B, doc A, whatever, close paren, and then just continue. You can choose to quote the document. It's difficult. I prefer you not say in document C, Washington said, because then you're making an assumption that your reader has memorized the eight documents and knows by heart which one they are. And even when I'm your reader, it usually takes me a while to memorize which document goes to what letter. So it's easier. Remember, assume, tell your reader what you want to tell them and assume that they don't know anything. Remember, when you write these essays, you're writing a persuasive essay. Always assume your writer doesn't know what it is, doesn't know as much as you do. So you're trying to convince this individual, he or she, what they need to know. Okay, does that help?
So we're citing.
If you paraphrase, yes. If you reference the document, Schiff's question was, are we citing even without quoting? The answer is yes. You and it's not, don't think of it as a formal MLA citation. I'm not, I don't want those, you know. You don't need to say, just doc period A, open close paren. Just the parenthesis just to keep it separated. So as I'm reading along, I don't think suddenly document A. What is doc A? Oh, okay, that's doc A. All right, put it towards the end.
Okay, so show the people that farmers are with that, could you still include those videos?
Yes, the question is not all questions or prompts are going to ask, you know, political, social, or political, economic, or ideological. If you have a simpler question like yes or no, can you include them? I told you guys at the beginning, this class is structured around three general themes: political, social, and economic. If you write an essay that contains those three themes to answer your prompt, you should be fine, even if it's not asking for it. It's always going to revolve around political, social, and economic. Those are the three pieces. Okay? Assuming the reader doesn't know anything about the topic, how do you include your prior knowledge? In your introduction, it should be a very good place for you to explain what kind of prior knowledge you have. I did this the other day, and I wrote it on the board because there were two people here and I didn't save it. I knew I should have. Okay. The French, the Seven Years' War marked a turning point in relations between the United States, between the Americas and Great Britain. Go off and talk about what was there in the process. Mention things like salutary neglect. Mention things like the colonies are able to develop on their own as a result of salutary neglect. Mention things like they develop their own political systems with individual local representation, which is different than the parliamentary system that Great Britain has, okay? Mention the fact that during salutary neglect, they are all busy making money. Because not only are they using the navigation laws to trade with Britain, but because of salutary neglect, Britain's looking the other way when they trade directly with other countries. Okay? And then once you've got that laid out, you come up to your thesis, and then when you start talking about, let's say, political as your first piece, you then want to roll out the politics. And you want to explain in more detail. Remember, your introduction is the teaser. The body paragraph is where you get into the real nuts and bolts of it. Okay? This is that awkwardly long pause of silence on the podcast where the people listening to it wonder if it just suddenly stopped.
I just wanted to go back to the prompt while we were going over it in class. We sort of were having some trouble. We were supposed to use our knowledge from 1740 to 1756.
Correct.
And then we have to say how the French and Indian War.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely good question. Let me repeat it for those who might actually want to listen to this later on if they download it. The question is such that, if I may paraphrase your question, the French and Indian War DBQ we went over in class asked for the French and Indian War of 1754 to 1763 as the time frame to address, yet the whole prompt said be sure to use your knowledge of 1740 to 1766. Am I correct? Okay. So how do you address that? You address that very simply. In your introduction is where you lay out your early knowledge, and then you lead up to the 1754 French and Indian War. Once you get into the meat and potatoes of it, you want to be talking about it. So somewhere in there, you need to be discussing early things and then later things. You can also talk about, remember, it wants you to focus on 1754 to 1763, but it doesn't mean you can't talk about 1740 to 1754, okay? So mention some things. Introduce it briefly in your intro and then get into the details of it in your paragraph, but don't spend your whole paragraph on it. So if you're writing a paragraph like politics, you might say, as your topic sentence, you might have something like, politics changed drastically over the 14-year period leading up to the French and Indian War. In the, around the 1740s, most colonial governments were truly representative of the local people and such like that. That's different than the way the British. During the French and Indian War, politics became a bigger issue. For example, blah, 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 blah. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Would you sort of show the effect of that?
You could, but you don't have to do it. Yes, you need to show the effect after the war but again, remember, it's only asking you 1763 to 1766. You have some things that take place, but not a tremendous amount. So you want to mention the Proclamation of 1763. You want to mention perhaps the Stamp Act, because there was a document that alluded. Remember the last document? On that thing was a newspaper which had a stamp and some skull and crossbones and all other things. So you definitely want to mention that, but that does not become the focus of your essay. It's there to mention and to let the reader know that you have the knowledge of that time period. Does that answer your question? Awesome. More awkward silence. Yes. You don't have to use all of them. You need to use the majority of them. But so if you've got 10 documents, you want to use about 8 of them, 9 of them. You want to try to. Now, by that, don't just throw documents in there just for the heck of throwing documents in there. And I've seen students do this. Okay? It doesn't make any sense just by throwing them in there. So I ask you to please be thoughtful about where you use them and make sure the documents are relevant and tie back directly to your prior knowledge. Remember, the documents should help support your argument, and your argument is developed really out of your prior knowledge. Do you understand that? Develop your argument out of your prior knowledge. Use the documents to support it. It's the ice cream sundae analogy. Okay, the documents are the little cherry on top of the ice cream sundae. That's the super duper thing you want. Don't worry, just put them there. Your prior knowledge and your thesis, that's the sauce, and what you know is the basis is the ice cream. So you put a scoop of ice cream in, put some sauce on top, and then throw your little cherry on top. Okay? Yes. How long will they be? Typical documents will be about as long as you saw them in that one. In some cases, they'll be 3 or 4 lines. In some cases, it could take up 8 or 10 lines. It's not going to be much longer than that. Remember, you need to have the time. You need to be, whoever does the DBQ, whether I do it, whether it's an AP one, whether you take it on an AP, you've only got a limited amount of time to read and analyze the documents, which is why I stress again, it's so important. If you jump straight from the prompt to the documents without doing your prior knowledge, you're doing yourself a disservice. Read the prompt, make sure you understand it, write down what you know. That's going to take you a minute, maybe more, maybe less, but no more than 2 minutes. And then once you've got everything you know about it written down, start reading the documents. Because when you read the documents, they're either going to tie back to your prior knowledge, or in some cases, they're going to spark a piece of prior knowledge that you didn't remember when you first wrote down. Oh, I remember this. I can use this as prior knowledge because I remembered it now because the document said it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, Shiv? The question is, what's getting graded? The answer is, the only thing getting graded is the writing, the answer. I do not grade your inventory. That is correct. Now, I'll look at your inventory, and to be honest with you, I might give you feedback on it, or I might write something down that says no inventory, especially if you don't do as well on it as you should. But the inventory is yours. They're not going to grade your inventory on the AP test. No, the question is, when we write the conclusion, do we have to throw the rebuttal in there? You don't have to. No, you don't have to throw it in there. Just start your conclusion as a restatement of your thesis in a different way. And then, as I said to you guys on the other day, I would go back and reread my first paragraph and summarize that in 1 to 2 well-done sentences. Either 1 really well-constructed or 2 okay-constructed sentences. Okay, and that's it. You don't have to throw the rebuttal back in there. Sarah? The question is, with regarding rebuttal, do you have to have a paragraph or can you weave the rebuttal in through the rest of the essay? I'd prefer you have a rebuttal paragraph. I don't want you really getting distracted of trying to figure out, how do I prove this and rebut it in the same paragraph? And remember, with rebuttal, it's easy. You're not trying to disprove everything. All you need is one little topic. So in the French and Indian War, if you said it was the main reason, the French and Indian War was the cause of the colonies drifting apart, you could then say you know, and you start your rebuttal paragraph. Others might argue that it really was the relationship with the colonies after the French and Indian War that caused the split between America and Britain. They will say that it was the result of all the acts and the frustrations the Americans felt that did that. However, that's not necessarily true, because during the French and Indian War, Americans and British went down a path of not of loathing each other or not liking each other. The relationship between soldiers and officers was seen as very different. Americans felt that officers in the British Army treated their enlisted men like slaves, which was not the perception that Americans had towards each other working within their militias. Do you see the difference? Do I also want you to include what? Quotes. Yes, you either have to quote the document or you have to paraphrase the document. The question is, do I want you to include quotes? Yes, you can either quote from the document or paraphrase it. Please don't fall into the trap many students tend to do, and that is, I get three or four sentences of a quote and an introduction and a close. There's no prior knowledge there. The bulk of that paragraph should have prior knowledge with support from the document, not a paragraph that you write three sentences and you write doc C next to it and then you do your transition. That's not what I want, okay? It needs to be a nice blend of the two. Okay, so the question is how much time or how many sentences do you need to explain the opposite point? Two is more than enough, as I said before. Others might argue that it was really the acts of it was really the proclamation of 1763 that drove the colonists away from the British. And then another sentence. By the British refusing to allow the colonists into area they truly felt belonged to them, it was their own, is what caused the colonists to be angry. That's not necessarily true. And then explain why. Does that help? Yes, there is a rubric. Where do you find the rubric? Where? AP exam. Go to the website, look at AP exam, and there's a link. It'll say DBQ rubric, and I think it says click here to download the rubric that you will be graded upon or something like that. And it's a 1 through 9 rubric. Yes, the question is just another follow-up to the rebuttal piece. Yes, 1 to 2 sentences about others may argue that it wasn't the French and Indian War, but in fact it was the Stamp Act that caused the problem. They will cite information explaining the colonies' uproar, unanimous uproar against paying a tax without being represented. That's not necessarily the case. If it wasn't for the relationship between Britain and America's troops in the war, blah, blah, blah. Do you understand? Or?
So your whole essay is about the first 2 sentences.
Your whole essay. I'm not sure I understand your point. When you're saying that's not true, yes, yes. And you have to use the words that's not true. You might say, however, those who might feel that way fail to take into account the relationship between the troops. They might fail to take into account that the Americans were busy governing themselves where British military officers were now trying to tell them what to do. It's basically taking 2 sentences most to show that you know the other side's opinion, and then getting rid of it right back into your piece. Okay?
Can we ever be tentative in our points? Like, if we were to say, like, it may have caused distress or unrest among
us? Yes, the question is, can we be tentative? The answer is no. You're writing a persuasive essay. Don't say it may have done this or it could have done that, because then probably what I'm going to do is circle it and say, or it could not have. Which one is it? Okay? Take a position. Be strong in your focus. Remember, you're trying to convince the reader that your thesis is right. Yours is better than anyone else's ideas.
Now that you
Great question. The question is, when we go back to rebuttal, can we pull something that we've already stated, or should it be something new? It really should be something new. You want, and it doesn't have to be a lot. It's just, again, one or two more sentences. So this is why that inventory is so important. Plus, you can use a document in your rebuttal. Do you understand that concept? You can use a document in your rebuttal. If you come up with a thesis, and in your thesis you go down the documents and you find seven of them work for you and three don't, then use one of those documents in your rebuttal. You know, you could sit there and argue back to the French and Indian War. Many will say it was the Stamp Act that caused the main rift. You know, in the masthead of the newspaper, the Pennsylvania Gazette, it was clear that the Stamp Act was causing problems and such like that. You know, and then you can get back and say, however, that's not necessarily true. While that paper may have reflected causes of the problems, it truly was the relationship between the French and Indian War where these problems developed. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, with some new piece of information. Okay? This is new, okay? It's 35 points. I understand it's new, and there's a very good chance each of us will be meeting, well, not each of us, but those of you who choose will sign up for a session and we'll sit for a half an hour and go over your DBQ. And we'll talk about why it worked and what was good about it, what needed more improvement about it. If you need to go, you're welcome to leave. You don't have to stand on ceremony. This is not a, I understand people have buses and sports or whatever else to do. So please don't just politely get up and say bye. Any other questions? Yes.
For a rebuttal, what point should, is there some sort of thing we should concentrate on in acknowledging the other?
I didn't hear the end of it.
Point that is a better, it's a better way to contradict your argument. As a, like, for example, you said Stamp Act.
Right.
Would that be a more appropriate first sentence for your rebuttal as opposed to another one?
Whatever you think will... The question is there a proper... If I may paraphrase what I think you said, is there a proper way to start off the rebuttal, or is there a proper first sentence? The answer is no. Whatever... You should have enough knowledge of this just from your readings and prior knowledge, and you could probably say why somebody might disagree with your thesis. Remember, if you wrote your thesis as a proper thesis, that is a statement that can be argued against, you can use the argument against your thesis as your rebuttal. Do you understand what I'm saying? Oh, is your grade going to be affected if the argument presented against your thesis is better or for worse? The argument against your thesis should be no more than two sentences, so it's really not an argument. All you're doing is recognizing that somebody could use that as an argument against you, and then you're going to tell the reader why you are right and that argument is not. Okay, did that answer your question? Okay. So you're really not trying to develop an argument. Just come up with an idea and write two sentences about it, and then you're out of it. Okay? How important is vocabulary, and do you have to be a walking thesaurus? No, you don't have to be a walking thesaurus. I don't know if I did it with your class. I know I did it with another class. If you keep repeating the same word over and over again, you will get a paper back that has a slash through the word. It doesn't mean I hated the word. It just means I'm sick of reading the word. Think about it. If you're writing a long sentence, why use the same word twice in the same sentence? A lot of students will do that. You know, during the French and Indian War, the colonies were forced to help the British, but at the same time, many of the people in the colonies did not want to support the British. Why would you use the word colonies twice? Think of a different way to say that. So, you know, it's the first time you're going to do it. I'm gonna pick on it and give it back to you. Is it going to totally destroy your grade? No, it's not going to totally destroy it. Might it cost you a point or two? Sure. What you want to do is by the time you take this exam in May, you want to have a broader vocabulary so that you can change what you say so you don't sound like somebody who doesn't really understand the material. Okay? Remember, the reader in Louisville has no idea who you are from a hole in the wall. You are just one of 350,000 essays that some people are going to read. So the better you come across, the more practiced you are, the more polished your vocabulary is, the better your quality of writing, the better you come across to the reader. And the reader, I would almost bet that if you sound like you know what you're talking about and you said it really well, that you're going to do better than if you kind of sound like you know what you're talking about, but the reader had to futz with your grammar and your language. Okay, so yeah, grammar is important, spelling is important. Remember I said the other day, if you don't know how to spell the word, don't use it. Come up with another word. Figure out another way to say it. Shiv, and then... Then I write down no rebuttal, no rebuttal, and no conclusion, and you lose some points on it. Is there a penalty points for it? I don't have... Each paragraph isn't 5 points. When you look at the scale of 0 through 9, typically what you get...
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you can get it. No, that's fine.
To what extent was Lisa a bad student council member for not giving me the bucket?
Ooh, let's write a DBQ on that, which means we need pictures.
To what extent? Okay. Yeah. Definitely following the DBQ format.
So that you learn for next year.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Hey, no problem, thanks.
Petruccelli, nothing. Well,
I guess they don't want to see Miss Petruccelli kiss a pig.
There's a $10 bill in there, though.
Oh, there's a 10 in here?
Oh, ooh. Must be nice. Did I answer your question, Shiv? No, I know what I was going. If you were to if you look at the rubric, it's 0 through 9, okay? And quite honestly, it breaks it down to 8 to 9, 5 to 7, 2 to 4, and 0 to 1. With early DBQs, 8 to 9 is usually like 33 to 35. 5 to 7. Here's what I do. Based upon the numbers, an 8 or a 9 should be an A. A 5 to 7 should be an E, a B. A 2 to 4 is probably somewhere in a C range, and a 0 to 1 is going to be down in the D range, and that's for your early ones. By January, 0 to 1s are Fs. If you haven't figured it out, I change the parameters at which I'm willing to grade you because I want you. These are early. You need some time to figure out what it is we're doing. Okay. Yeah, you should. And maybe I will give you one, but let's see how you do on this one first. Okay?
For the rebuttal paragraph, when we're introducing the argument that we use against us, how do we word it so that...
Okay, question is, how do you introduce the argument against you in the rebuttal paragraph? And the answer is very simple. It can be argued that the British were actually friendly towards the Americans during the French and Indian War, and in fact helped them as opposed to thinking that they didn't do anything. And then you give me another sentence which just has one teeny little piece of evidence, and then you go into your rebuttal. It can be argued. It can also be argued. Some people like to say some historians will argue, but then the question becomes, who are these historians who will argue that? So I would stay away from that. Yes?
You said you were able to cite sources other than the documents that were given. Is that true?
On a DBQ, I would only cite the documents in the DBQ. On an FRQ, by all means, if you found something that I didn't put up on the website that you found information from, as long as you tell me where it came from, not one of those, don't make it a nebulous, like, I read on some magazine article about such and such. No, but if you say, I read an article in History Today where it was argued blah, 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 then that's a reputable source, okay?
Typically, for 8 to 9 essays,
Yep. But just remember, quantity does not equal quality. I've had some really disastrous 4 or 5 page essays, which are very painful to get through. I will give you a booklet that has 4 blank pieces of paper in it, and you fill up as much as you feel you need. But if you fill up one side and halfway down the other, you haven't nearly done quite as much as you need to do. Okay? Just again, remember, it's quality. I'd rather you dazzle me with your brilliance than baffle me with your you-know-what. Okay? So please don't do that. I'd rather have the third supporting paragraph. Absolutely. No, nothing formal. But as I said before, if you look at your documents, I promise you there's going to be a document in there that you could use to argue the opposite side. When you're given 10 documents, all 10 documents do not lead to one argument or another. And depending on the DBQ you get, some are going to have 6 or 7 that are going to relate to one side of an argument and 3 or 4 that might relate to the other side of the argument. So you want to decide which way you're going to go and then use those documents accordingly. Right. You don't need it. No, you can, as I said, you can say if your thesis was the French and Indian War caused, you know, was the root cause of the split between the Americans and the British, you can argue in your rebuttal, your first sentence could be, so others will, because remember, you just spent 3 paragraphs arguing why that was the root cause. So now you're on that 5th paragraph, you can say, others would argue that it wasn't the French and Indian War, but in fact the events that came after the French and Indian War, that was the root cause of the split. Then you might say it was the acts such as the Proclamation of 1763 and the Stamp Act that caused the Americans to begin to get the idea of rebelling against Great Britain. That's not necessarily correct, because during the French and Indian War, and then go back with one more piece of evidence that you had from your thing. Now, if you have a document to support that other side, it's okay to do it. And again, I go back to that same example because I'm trying to remember the documents in the French and Indian War one. The one I remember clearly is the masthead of the Pennsylvania Gazette, that last document on that page. You can sit there and say, you know, others may argue it was the acts that caused the split. The Pennsylvania Gazette, which was published in, you know, 1765, clearly showed its displeasure with the skull and crossbones and the depressing way that it was worded, document F, close parenthesis. That's not necessarily correct, because during the French and Indian War, blah, 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 blah. Does that help? Okay. Okay, so the question is, if you've got 3 or 4 documents that support one side of the argument and maybe 6 or 7 that support the other side, and you think it's going to be easier to use those 3 or 4 documents, what should you do? Well, you can write whatever you want. At the end of the essay, I'm going to count up the number of documents you used. And if you only use 3 or 4 documents, I'm going to look at the rubric and I'm going to circle that number for the documents. So, and remember, the rubric is a conglomeration. If you saw the rubric, it's 1 through 9, and it talks about in that, you know, 8 and 9 category, uses all the documents, used, you know, essay is well constructed, blah, blah, blah. You might have a rotten thesis, good use of documents, and some analysis, and so you might have something from the 2 to 4 category, a couple from the 5 to 7 category, maybe 1 in the 8 to 9 category. So it's not going to be a perfect science where you're going to get, okay, this one had 3 in the 5 to 7 category, they'll give them a 3. No, it's going to, there's still a little, unfortunately, there's still a little bit of subjectivity. Well, the thesis really wasn't good, but they wrote really well, but they really didn't analyze. So it's about a 5. And that's where the reader's judgment of what a good essay is comes in. Anything else? Yeah?
So just the rebuttal.
All right, let's talk about the rebuttal.
So you state
yeah.
You state your own, another new point.
Correct.
And that's it.
Well, yeah, but you don't want it to be 3 sentences. You're looking for a well-constructed paragraph. So the answer we were just discussing, for those of you listening, is you state the opposite viewpoint. You have another sentence that might support that opposite viewpoint. You may even have a document to support that argument. And then you state, but that's not necessarily true. And then you say one more thing about your side as to why your argument is right as opposed to their argument. And if you do the rebuttal right, you're looking at a good 5 or 6 sentence paragraph. Okay?
You said we need the hook, obviously, for the beginning intro, and I don't think we read this in detail. Should the hook be considered prior knowledge also? Or should we
Yeah, don't start. Do not start an essay with a quote. Do not start. Say again? Yes, well, that's where your hook can come from. Your hook can come from your prior knowledge. You know, the one I showed you on the PowerPoint was the Civil War. You know, the Civil War was the turning point in the relationship between blah, 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 blah. The French and Indian War was the turning point in relations between Great Britain and the United States. Ooh, what does this person mean by that? And then you'll see. Yes, yes. If you quote a document, at the end of the quote, just do docs, open paren, doc C, close paren. But what you should do to introduce the document, and again, I'm using the French and Indian War one, and I'm remembering the one where Washington wrote a letter. And so what I would suggest you say is, in Washington's letter to General Braddock, he said, quote, blah, 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 end quote, Doc C. Okay? So you do want to introduce the document. Again, remember that the reader may not know that which document is which letter by hand or in memory. So you definitely want to set that up for the reader so that the reader understands you have that information.
And like if you paraphrase it, you often want
Yes, if you paraphrase, I still want Doc C or Doc whatever after it. You know, in Washington's letter to Braddock, he made a point of explaining that he wanted to learn new military tactics and blah, 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 thereby showing that the Americans had, you know, gained knowledge during the French and Indian War, Doc C. With me? Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No, just after the document where you use it. But please be careful. Don't fall into the trap of telling me what the document says when you've already told me the document. In other words, you don't want to write that Washington's letter to Braddock, he asked for more training for military. This means Washington wanted to learn how to become a military man. That's not what you're doing. You're using that document to support your prior knowledge. Don't explain the document to me. I understand what the document means. Trust me, I really, really do. Okay? Would you please speak up a little bit? All I understood was literary essays. Okay, if I understood the question correctly, in literary essays, you're being asked to use some sort of a quote and then say how that quote relates to your thesis. Is that correct? No, you don't have to do that literally, okay? Your topic sentences of your paragraphs, of your each of your three body paragraphs, should have a relation to the thesis. They don't have to restate it, but they should have a connection to the thesis. The documents are there to support your argument, not to tie back to your thesis. Okay? Yep. Yep. Body paragraphs, just to repeat what was said, which is absolutely correct. You want a topic sentence that ties back to your thesis. You then want to write your sentences that support it, use some sort of document support, and then a transition sentence that moves into your next paragraph. Absolutely. I think what you will discover, the comment was it sounds easy. It is hard. It's difficult. Good writing takes practice. It takes time. It takes practice. It takes a willingness on your part to take whatever constructive feedback you might get from me and then willingness to try to change it. I can't tell you how many students, you can write DBQs whenever you want. There's copies of DBQs in those books. There's copies of DBQs online in different places. You can do whatever you want. You want to write a practice one, that's fine. Write a practice something and then make an appointment to sit down and talk to me. We'll read it together where it doesn't count for points. It really depends on how much time and energy you want to put in to improve your writing. Going once. Going twice. Last chance. Okay, it's been real. Thank you for coming, guys. Goodbye.